Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick is back with us. Yes, I don't know. Today feels like more of a, feels like it should be at least Wednesday. It feels like it should be Thursday or Friday, the way this week has gone. But we got a lot of news today. We're talking Tesla. We're talking Nike, KB Holmes, Lululemon, Johnson & Johnson. A lot on our radar. We'll cover as much of it as we can. Our guest at 8:35 will be Nate Tobik. He runs the site CompleteBankData.com. He's also the author of the Bank Investor's Handbook. Good time to have Nate on. We'll talk about the banks with him at 8:35. Want to see some more likes on that YouTube video? Want to see some more subscribes as well? And I will throw it to Joel now. And Joel, what is going on here in the pre-market session?
Some follow-through from yesterday's rally. Currently trading up 9.5 handles at 08.75. That's 33.08. Got above Friday's close, 16.25. That was a number, big number I'm still looking at for today's session. 19.75 high. Made the pre-market low early, 32.91.50. Not much underneath that, but we are a good 15 handles away from that, 15, 16 handles. Crude in the red by a dime here at 39.70, just hanging out the $40 area. Another leg down in gold, just hanging out close to 1900 too long, down at $23.60 at 18.84 even. Silver, that's down a buck and 6 cents at 23.47. Bitcoin in the red too by $30 at 10,465. Let's bring in Triple D here, waiting on some earnings reports. Yeah. But boy, we got a nice market today. We're rallying, and is this going to rally? Going to stick? Is the question?
I mean, we saw the buy the dip in tech. Obviously, we had a significant dip after the open, and that was a buying opportunity, which we talked about. If there was a dip, that we would be buying. I think you're going to continue seeing tech down here this morning. Obviously, it's all on about Tesla. We'll talk about Tesla in a minute, and that's probably the catalyst for why tech is relatively weaker. So you're still seeing that buy the dip mentality, at least in those stocks. You're also seeing a little bit of a reopening trade here today. Johnson & Johnson vaccine getting into stage three. So you're seeing stocks like Boeing, American Airlines lifting a little bit. Every time they've rallied, though, it's just been another selling opportunity. So I'll say guilty until proven innocent there. But so far, so good.
All right, do we want to do earnings? We want to do Tesla,
I think Tesla
battery day?
Yeah, there's really no huge earnings here, except for Nike, obviously.
I mean, Nike's pretty big.
Nike's big, yeah. Sorry, there's one huge earnings. We'll get to that in a second. Let's do Tesla.
All right, so prior to the battery day, they had, of course, their annual shareholders meeting. Biggest takeaway or biggest headline out of that was Elon just reaffirming the previously given guidance. They had previously guided around 500,000 deliveries this year, and he said yesterday that he thinks that they'll basically do that. Thinks they'll do probably do grow 30% to 40% this year. That was the biggest headline out of that presentation. And then as far as the battery presentation, that was interesting. We had a lot of talk about vertical integration, a lot of talk about how the batteries worked, talk of a cheaper a $25,000 model. And the reaction, I mean, you can see it. It is what it is. You know, a lot of what they said was tempered, and you know, we're not quite there yet. It'll be a couple of years. Seems like that's what people are grabbing onto. But Elon himself tweeted that 2 days ago. It seemed like so. I thought it was interesting. It was a little technical, but I didn't know much about batteries before. So
some commentary, and I believe it's hitting the lithium suppliers here, is that he said in that there is plenty of lithium. So he wasn't worried about the supply of lithium. And if you look this morning, ALB, pure lithium supplier, down 7.7%. LTHM, stock that I own, stock that a lot of people own, is down 7% as well. This is off of those comments from Musk, obviously. You know, if he's saying, well, we're short, you know, we need to find lithium, these stocks would be going the other way. So I said plenty of lithium out there. So you're seeing the lithium suppliers get dinged a bit.
Joel, you know, Dennis, thoughts? I just gotta figure out how to make either more wagers or smarter wagers with you on Lunch Bets.
How did you hold on yesterday with Carvana? That's what I want to know.
1,000 shares.
I put
1,000 shares up there. That's all.
Two, Joel blocked it. I said it hit the high at 235 someday. Well, it was almost this day. It got within 26 cents. 234.74. It got within 26 cents. That $230 stock ran 34 points from the open and then died right before I won the bet. I even tweeted at you, I was getting hungry. And now it's off, and now it gets downgraded. And now I'm actually concerned. So, anyways, that's for another story. But somehow Joel holds on miraculously the skin of his teeth in this bet.
I think Joel brought that up because if he had bet with you on Tesla yesterday, I think he would have won.
Well, I wasn't giving him a Tesla bet.
Why not? But I think.
Well, you were all bullish Tesla.
It popped afterwards. Did you see on the bat? I thought that it could have a pop, and it popped to 445 until he kept talking too long. It popped. look at last night. The stock went over 445 last night. Got back all of its losses. I mean, this is why after hours there's a lot of opportunity. Look where it went to.
It did.
And then it started to leak, and he kept talking. You know, if you were to stop talking, he kept talking, 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 and they decided that, well, he's not a very good talker, and he's a genius, but he's not a very good public speaker, we'll say that much.
It was a very, like a nerdy presentation. Like, I didn't know anything about batteries. It was like, pretty technical, I thought. So it lacked, I think, some flair, but that's okay.
Well, the stock's lacking flair here this morning. It is off the lows. What do you do now? So you've had battery day. You've had the catalyst. You still have the wild card that maybe one day this gets out of the S&P, but we know they didn't get out of there a month or through a few weeks ago. So they're obviously maybe not imminently going to get added to the S&P. It was a big slap in the face to Tesla. So you topped out multiple times at 450. You even went there after hours and topped out there just one more time for everyone. You have, you know, 450 like the Rock of Gibraltar up there for resistance. And now you're breaking down through 400. Does it hold on to the 400? It's trying to come back here this morning by the dip mentality coming in here. But we know the valuation is just insane. So, I mean, at a certain point, if trend actually does break on this, and you could probably argue it already has. Well, I guess you can't really.
You got a date with 373.30 is what you have, Dennis said. That's going to that's September 14th. So that's what I'm going to give you right now. That's the next daily low coming in under 400. You haven't quite hit that in the pre-market for today. We're going to use 391.51 at your pre-market low. But this low right here, that's where we're just going to go. You hit a wall up there. You hit. You know, you had the double top at 500. It was almost a quad top up there. I was actually giving you 450 to 460, and it's just going to cool off a little bit and come down to 373.30. And
you're holding on to your shares, though. Valuation, yeah, be damned.
Valuation, smaluation.
Well, I mean, that's the truth. You know what? That's the truth. The market hasn't cared about valuation on Tesla ever, so why should it start caring? So, I mean, the story is really still intact. They're firing still on all cylinders. I guess they don't fire on cylinders. They fire on all batteries. I don't know. I'm not coming in because I can't justify it.
No, no, no.
But as a trade, I'm not coming in here either because it's broken trend now, and I don't like those topped up 3-4 times in the 450s. I'd be a seller of rallies in it. So at this time, I'd be a seller of rallies until it can, you know, get over that 450 area, which has struggled with forever. I think the easier money's on the short side here now.
Yeah,
I'm not selling at 30 points down though either. Like, you know, I wouldn't be shorting it here today down 30 points. Remember the name of the game. We'll remind you guys again. It's been a week or so. It's buy the dip and sell the rip. So if you're bearish of stock, you sell the rip. You never sell the dip and you never buy the rip. That's the way I play it.
If you can get near yesterday's low, 417.60. Which I don't think you're going to, based on the 15-minute chart. That would fill the gap from yesterday. And then you're risking that. And I kept on giving you all the that split adjusted close of 442.68. I don't know how many times I've talked about that on the show. But, you know, 420 with a 450 stop or whatever. I don't know if you're going to get a shot at that yet today. Maybe tomorrow.
So continue on our merry parade here, Spencer. Let's go to earnings.
Let's go to Nike. Because
whoosh,
exactly right. Whoosh, 95 cents was their EPS last quarter. Blew away the estimate, up year over year. Sales 10.6 billion, also blew away the estimate, up year over year. It's like the rest of its retail. It's all about e-commerce. Everything was about e-commerce growth. Digital sales up 82% year over year. Just mind blowing stuff.
What are people buying?
Shoes.
They're buying what Nike is selling. They're buying shirts and workout gear and.
But think about it. It makes sense. It's the outdoor trade. Everybody's been going outdoors and doing more things outdoors, and you're going to get better running shoes. And Nike has a lot of other outdoor activities as well. It's an outdoor play, so it makes sense. It makes perfect sense that Nike's been performing. I mean, even though some of the stores that sell Nike products have been closed, people find a way to buy this stuff. So it still makes sense. It's up $15. It's new all-time highs. I never short a stock making a new all-time high. It is firing on all cylinders. And if we're still going to be in lockdown, I mean, we are going to get colder. But, you know, people are doing more activities. Like, you know, they're not going and sitting around and watching the movie. They're doing more outdoor activities. And that benefited Nike last quarter.
134. That's what you got to. If you want to use that as a target. What I'm looking at here on the fit, I mean, it's just holding up here. I mean, someone is bidding this thing. What, 131.50, Dennis? Is that where it's at?
All night it's just went up. It's been holding up. And it went here. Yeah.
Man, oh, man.
It's locked in now. Like, don't think this isn't one that's, oh, it's going to all of a sudden give it all back. It hasn't been even.
It doesn't feel like that.
It hasn't even been choppy in the last 6 hours of pre-market and after-hours trading. So it's kind of locked in. It's found its home up $15. It's where it wants to be. And remember, if you're wondering why the Dow's up so much, this is it.
That's
it's
why.
All Nike. Because you come in like, wow, the Dow's having a good day, but the market's not having a great day. It's all Nike. This is a huge, obviously, big boost to the Dow here. The majority of the Dow's gains today is Nike.
Well, you know this what this 131.22, that's been the low of this congestion here. I mean, you know it. Ain't going to be the low of the day. You know they got some work, you know, some work to do in the 120 handle and maybe 140 handle. I don't know. I'm not going to make a wager on this just because it's holding up so well, but I would say if it – watch the open and let it get to 134. Let it get over 134 and let it go 135, 136. Just the longer it takes to take out that 134 – then, you know, maybe like the guy that bought the October 125 options is going to say, man, there's a lot of juice in this and I'm going to, you know, a lot of time premium. No, not a lot of time premium, but shorter term traders, I would certainly take some profits. I wouldn't even hold out for that. I'd be like, boom, 130, 170 sold to you. But we'll see. We'll see if we give you some continuation.
Joel, you never take profits. Joel's the eternal holder. He holds on forever. He's
for
like Warren
things.
Buffett. Lisa's never sold a stock in her life. Joel just holds.
That's holding.
Well, he has these awesome winners. And you know what? I tweeted this out yesterday, and it goes to show you. I wish I would just not look at my long-term portfolio because the gains you can make by just holding on to stocks are a lot more than you can do by trading stocks. And it was from Piru Saxena. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. But he said, why hold on to winners? He said, and here's what his tweet was. Apple listed. Your split adjusted close on Apple now from when it listed in 1980 is 13 cents. Stock's $111. Nike listed at 17 cents in 1980. Stock is $116. Home Depot listed a split adjusted 2 cents in 1981. Current price $273. Starbucks listed at 34 cents in 1992. Current price $83.95. And the only one I have held, not quite as long as when since it was listed, but very close, is MasterCard. It listed at $4.50. It's now $335. My average cost base on MasterCard, I believe, is $11.
Yes.
So the one stock that I held on forever.
Okay.
And I wish I would. I had Apple years ago. I had Home Depot years ago. I had even Starbucks years ago. I don't think I ever had Nike really.
You didn't have Starbucks. What did you have?
Yes,
Starbucks?
I did have it at one time.
You had Starbucks?
Yeah, but then I hated it. I decided that nobody's buying $5 coffee, and I sold it at like probably equivalent of $20, maybe less. I did have Starbucks at one time.
Okay,
you know what, Austin Nathaniel, you know, what about GE? What about IBM?
Good,
you know?
Point. And this is why you got to continue, I guess, to look at the story and make sure the story doesn't fall apart and break. So you want good companies. And as soon as they know, like, I guess the problem is if you hold on long enough, you eventually got your, well, Kodak came back, but you know, you do have your General Electrics and you do have, you know, a lot of companies. And like people even who have invested in Ford and, you know, for the last 25 or 30 years, it hasn't worked out. So
the answer to your question, Dennis, why not hold on to winners? Show me now the maximum drawdowns on Apple and Home Depot and Starbucks, because I'm sure at several points they were down 80-90%.
I don't know if they were down that much, but there's probably some points where they were down a lot. Apple for sure. We all thought Apple was going bankrupt back in 1995. Microsoft had come around, and I think it was 1998 when Microsoft teamed up with Apple that brought Apple around, and that was post-adjusted $3. So if you actually, it split a bunch of times there. It was probably when Apple was about 50 cents in 1998. And a lot of people thought Apple wasn't going to make it, and Microsoft came in and helped them out. Remember that? It was before you were born, probably, Mr. Israel, but, well, I guess it wasn't. But it was 1998, because I can remember it, because it was when I first started trading. And Apple was just starting to come onto the radar. And really, Apple's been straight up ever since. But it was Microsoft that helped Apple in 1998 when they needed help. Maybe it was, you know, Gates feeling a little bit of obligation to Jobs, because we know a little bit of the Windows action. Maybe some of those Jobs had some of those ideas. So, well, obviously, I don't know.
Dennis, you're really pulling one out of the history books.
It is, Joel. You don't remember that? Somebody in the chat, help me out. It was Microsoft in 1998 that helped out Apple when Apple's in trouble.
How'd they help them?
Apple was in a lot of trouble before they brought Jobs back.
They were.
And after they brought him back too, they were still in trouble for a little bit, but he turned them around. But that was my point though, is it looks great, you know, 30 years later after, you know, stock's been going up for a decade plus, 20 years, but before that, it's hard to stomach drawdowns. This is my point, right? It's hard to stomach it when you're down.
It's 60, really hard.
70, 80%.
I went through 2001 when the NASDAQ, this was an index. The NASDAQ was down over 81%. It fell from the year 2000 to, I think, 2002. It fell 81%. It went from 5,100 to 1,100. And it looked like you should never, ever buy a stock again. And it ruined a generation of investors. And then just when you thought it was safe and you're back in 2006 and 2007, it's like, okay, we're starting to get some of these losses back from 2001. They pulled the rug out from under you in the financial crisis, and some stocks fell 80, 90% again. So it is hard in some cases to stomach these, you know. I'm sure Amazon too, Spencer. I'm sure back in 2001, I would bet if you look at the chart, Amazon, you're correct, probably fell 80 or 90%. When we thought, you know, online pet store, online this store, online bookstore. Yeah, I thought for sure online bookstore, that's going under. And obviously Bezos was a little bit smarter than the online pet food store. So, and now we have an online pet food store in Chewy, which is funny how that worked out. You know, pets.com was the first Chewy, and, you know, it looked like, wow, this is a great idea. We'll sell pets food online. And it didn't work out. But, you know, now all of a sudden we're back to 1999 and we're buying pet food stores again. So I don't know. We've come full circle here. But, you know, when you put it in perspective, it is hard. It is hard to hold through these, you know, significant drawdowns. And the best thing you can do if you're a long-term investor, if you think you're in good companies, is just maybe not look at it.
That's it. All right.
I look at it too much. That's why I sell.
That's your problem. All right. Enough of the long-term talk. Let's get back to the markets. If you're wondering what's the deal with Under Armour and Foot Locker this morning, well, Nike is a deal there. Yes. Under Armour up 3%, Foot Locker up 3%. So that's
Crocs, SKX.
Oh, have you seen Crocs?
Dick's Sporting Goods. All Dick's is up 5%. This is all from Nike. Lululemon would be up from Nike, but they did their own buyback too. So everybody will say it's a buyback, but it would have been up on Nike too. I mean, Nike is having an effect on a lot of stocks here this morning. So you got to know those sympathy plays, because you definitely don't want to be short them when you see Nike taking off. And there's opportunities there too. I mean, now, am I paying up 5% for Dick's because Nike's up 12%? No. But, you know, if you could pick it up, and some people I'm sure were savvy right on the initial numbers, picking it up quickly, there is opportunity in the sympathy plays.
How about General Mills? They did have earnings. Let's talk a little cereal.
Okay. They're at about an hour ago now. EPS $1 versus an 87 cent estimate. Sales 4.4 versus $4.2 billion on the raising their dividend from 49 cents to 51 cents a share.
It popped over 60, and then everybody realized this is a food stock, and we shouldn't buy, maybe pay up $2.50 for a food stock. And it's given back a lot of the gains since then. Actually, I think in the pre-market chart we're looking at there, Joe, it's over 60. So not only paying up $2, almost paying up $3. So tip to investors, don't pay up $3 for a food stock. I don't care what the earnings look like, because that, in, you know, a 5% move in a food stock typically doesn't happen. That's getting back half of the losses from September. So it was a selling opportunity. I think that number is safe. I don't think it sees 60 here again. I don't know if it leaks all the gains. It was an okay quarter, but you know, you see all these food stocks and they're like Campbell's Soup and General Mills, and obviously Kraft Heinz has been the dog of the group, but they really haven't, you know, their dividend plays.
Campbell's Soup just hanging out and going nowhere. For the General Mills, you did get to 60. Since we've fallen back over a buck on that, I think you might have to get your offers out ahead of that. 60.13, I saw that as a daily high. Where was that? That was the daily high right there on September 10th. Falling back here, you are, what are we doing compared to yesterday's range? I mean, if you feel like you have to own this one, maybe you get a shot at the close. 57.91 with the low from yesterday, 57.63. Oh, it's just, I think you did miss your chance to sell this at 60.
I think you did too.
All right, and then
Stitch. We eat cereal anyways. I mean, do you eat cereal?
I had cereal last night, and the only reason was I was tied up with the market, and I couldn't even – there was so much action last night, I didn't eat supper. So then at 8 o'clock, I was starving to death. So when the equities closed after hours. And I ran up, and I ate a bowl of Lucky Charms.
Sometimes magically delicious.
They were magically delicious. I was like, my milk even turned blue. It was awesome.
Sometimes I think Dennis is still a college student at heart. I swear.
Captain Crunch.
I was going to say,
never liked Captain Crunch.
I ate cereal during lockdown, during quarantine, but that was pretty much it because I was home all day, every day. I wanted to go to Stitch Fix and Aurora Cannabis together, both down this morning. Stitch Fix's numbers missed estimates. They did report a slight uptick in demand in July and August, but they missed on their earnings. Aurora Cannabis, same story. I mean, I didn't look too deeply into the report, but their sales were.
Why was ACB up so much yesterday ahead of the report? That's what I want to know.
I could tell you why.
Why?
We had Alan Brockstein on.
Or no, is that what it was? It was us.
2 days ago.
That was Alan Brockstein.
I'm wrong.
No, but regardless, I mean, they really thought the ACB report was going to do something awesome. And they bought the hell out of this thing yesterday, and obviously giving back all the gains. Now, with that being said, we're right back down. We're at the lows of the move.
Yeah.
You are right on key support for ACB. You do not want to see this take out $6. Below six, it's making new lows. Is that all-time lows? Not all-time lows. It was back back in 2016. But multi-year lows, really. I guess in March it got lower than that, too. It got down to 66 cents.
Also, so what ACB said is that they had some white revenue guidance. They just reported $67 million. That was revenue for the last quarter, but they guided $60 to $64 million for the upcoming quarter. So if you're buying this, you're buying it on the turnaround story of the new CEO. He just joined the company. It was his first report. He's been there for like 2 weeks. So you're buying this on that story, but they've got to prove it first.
Yeah, you got, you know, Nike firing on all cylinders and ACB firing on no cylinders. So sold to you. I don't want a part of this.
Look at this this Stitch Fix. Boy, people are jammed in this one. How did it hit the 30?
Holy mackerel yesterday, though.
What was going on?
Oh, it's going to report earnings. Stitch Fix. Everybody's going to put stitches in their clothes. No, just joking. But I mean, 31.30. It was crazy. We talked about the breakout. I'm like, it broke out over 30. That's nice. Does have an earnings report, though. So obviously anything. We know earnings reports are always coin flips. So if you got a trade on, you take the profits before the earnings because anything can happen in an earnings report. And it was a nice breakout yesterday. It was a nice pre-run. So the nice money was made ahead of the earnings again. I mean, I've been talking about this forever, that there is alpha to extract from buying a stock a week before it reports and then selling it, you know, at 359 on the night it reports, like right before. So don't hold it into the report. There's alpha to extract, and whoever did that extracted maximum alpha yesterday. This stock's getting slammed on the earnings report today.
What do you think now? I mean, it got down to
everybody's caught.
Just under 26. Got down to 25.80. So you're I don't know. Boy, oh boy.
I know. Everybody's caught from the last 2 days. Yeah. I don't think it's coming back. I think your $31.88 and $30 is long gone now.
That is obviously long gone.
Hindsight 2020, but you know, you're 26.5 and we're not like chopping around. It's exact opposite of the Nike chart. You got the big sell off on the report, and somebody bought this up to 34, so they're really slammed. And now you're sitting here just hanging out at 26. So you've stabilized. So that's the good news, is you've stabilized. But we've seen this time and time again. When the stocks, you know, get beat up, they don't bounce right back usually. You know, the only way they do that is if they, you know, they bounce around a little bit and they get beat up in the pre-market session, but then they start to come back. I mean, this is not coming back in the pre-market session. So now it's, as it trades more and more volume, it starts to get more locked in, meaning, you know, now you got people caught. People who bought this 2 days will be like, please give my 28, please give my 29, please give my 27. I think the path of least resistance could actually be lower for SFIX. So I would not buy this dip. Joel wants to make it back. The contrarian in Joel is always there. So he's like right there licking his chops saying.
I'll tell you right now, lower 25s. I don't even think you're going to
get
there.
Why do you want it though? The earnings were disappointing. At least the market thinks they're disappointing. What's the catalyst to take this right back? An overall market rally maybe?
Let's say if I was short. That's where I would be looking to bring it in short term for today. Sure. Just because you got four lows in the same area, right? And I think you got a lot of people caught here too. Even your shorter term, your intermediate traders, you know, they were shortening the report. Oh, look at this monthly resistance at 30. No way it's going to beat. And then they got jammed yesterday. And now they're like, wow, whew, man, 25, 26. You know, I took some heat up to 34. I'm going to bring it in.
I just don't think there's a lot of shorts in here. What's the short interest in this thing, Spencer?
There's somebody short. Someone else.
I don't know. Well, there's always somebody short.
Yeah.
Could be.
Oh, it is high.
Yeah.
It is high. Okay, so Joel's got a case here. You know,
there's
your catalyst, is that shorts want to bring it in and they can pop it back up a bit. But I'm not coming in and buying because
no,
it's just
no,
high.
No. I don't understand
shorts
the whole thing.
Shorts won here.
You have someone come to your house to help you buy clothes? I mean, or someone...
What exactly do they do?
They don't come to your house.
What exactly does Stitch Fix do?
Okay.
You know, obviously they don't fix stitches.
Obviously, Dennis, you don't use them.
I don't use them at all. I traded the stock for the last 2 years, and I don't totally understand what they do. I'm Googling it right now. Here I am. I made 200 trades in Stitch Fix over the last couple of years.
They sell pajama pants.
Oh my gosh. I swear I've explained it several times on this.
I always forget. I'm like, I miss my window period for remembering what Stitch Fix does. And I probably will ask you next quarter again. But explain to me again exactly what they do.
Fair enough. You go on their site. You tell them your size and what kind of clothes you want.
And they make them for you?
And they don't make them, but they will send them to you. And then if you don't like it, you send it back. And that's it.
This kind of actually would – I probably would like this if I bought this, Joel, because I hate trying on clothes. And my wife already does this job for me. When we used to go out and go to malls, I never would go to a mall. I've been to a mall like once in a year I would go there, probably just to buy my wife a Christmas present because it's the only person that I buy presents for because my wife does all the other shopping. But I like the fact that I don't have to go anywhere. So maybe I would actually participate in this. And I could get some better clothes because my clothes
are
horrible.
Where do you go, though? You don't leave your basement.
Exactly. So I need a Stitch Fix to get me my clothes. So I maybe start using the services. And maybe I'll start getting the stock for love. All right. Joel's done Stitch Fix.
All right. 8:30 here. We'll get Nate Tobik on in 5 minutes.
I want to see
more likes. See if we can get to 200 likes before Nate, that would make me and Joel and Dennis very happy. Let's go to Jonathan Johnson here.
Yeah, that's
so happy.
Yeah, news this morning. They are moving on up to the phase 3 trial.
Moving on up. I saw
their COVID-19 of their COVID-19 vaccine candidate. So next steps are happening. Good news for Jonathan Johnson. Good news for all of us here. This morning, stock's up 2%.
I don't. Anyways, Joel, you can start sometimes. I don't always have to go first, you know.
Yeah, I just like to hear how wrong you are and then take the other side. Mounds of resistance at over 150. I don't think you're going to get there. Three highs right there. No, 151. I stand corrected. I'd be licking my chin. Nah, it's not even going to get there today. It's not going to get to 151. I'd use 149.65. That's your three-day high as a potential target. You only got to 140, and you've already faded. I don't know. It's going to give some of this back. It's definitely going to give some back.
Well, we don't know definitely anything, but it's been definitely the play to fade these stocks
on
positive drug trials, on the COVID trials. It's been the play again and again and again and again and again and again. So history does tend to repeat itself. So I'm not going to try to say this is the time that they don't fade it. It's up $3. It's a nice pop for J&J. It's a big stock. It was getting the gutter yesterday. It's coming into resistance. It looks like a fade to me as well.
Okay.
All right. I'm with you. I'm with you. No bet.
It's up $3. $3. So it's nice gains here. And it just kind of was in the gutter the last couple of days. So, good news, though. Good news.
I mean, and this is obviously, you know, a little bit of a reopening trade happening here this morning because of Johnson & Johnson. We hinted off that off the hop. American Airlines trading up 2%. Delta trading up 1.5%. But, you know, again, we keep seeing it that the reopening trade, when they get this positive drug trials, it's the market is numb to it now. They pop them a little bit, but they're not like, you know, when we were 2 months ago, it's like, oh, it's positive trial. We're up 300 points. No, it's kind of numb to it. There's just been too many, little positive trials here, positive trials there. And the rallies in these reopening stocks don't even hold that well. I mean, I look at the IWM. If this would happen 2 months ago, the IWM would be ripping up 1.5%, 2% right now. It's up 0.2%. So it's not even up much at all. So this is just the market's becoming numb to it. And I don't know what that means because you start thinking, okay, well, what's going to be the catalyst? I guess when we finally get it approved, maybe that's going to be the real catalyst. But if these stocks aren't popping much, you know, in these situations, it's tough to be long. Boeing is getting a nice little pop here this morning, but is it just another opportunity to sell? Every time it pops, it seems like it's another opportunity to sell. The stock keeps leaking. So I don't know. It's hard to be long in all these reopening plays.
They don't go anywhere.
Exactly. Or they go down. Yeah. I mean, you know, some of them go down. Every time they come back, I mean, Kohl's, think about 3 days ago, 4 days ago. It's like, oh, we're starting to see some life in some of the retailers. And here it is. They pull the rug out from under you again. Again. It's like Groundhog Day around here. Every time these reopening stocks rally, they're selling opportunities, they come right back down. So I don't know when they sustain the rally. But until they start to, like, you know, they can't sustain it more than a few days, and then they hit them down again. American Airlines, the same story. It's a nice rounding. Look at the chart. Take away the last three red candles in American Airlines, AAL. And you look at the chart, and you're like, oh, it's rounding nicely. You could even argue maybe a long cup and handle here. It's starting to look like if that thing could get up over 14, it could really go. And you think it's going to get up over 14, it sneaks its head above it, and then they pull the rug out from under, and it's back at 12. It's so tough. And that's why everybody keeps picking on tech stocks. Why? Because they don't get punished in the tech stocks. And every time they get, you know, they buy these other stocks, they realize that these other stocks suck. And they go back to the tech stocks. And that's why every time you get dips in tech, they get bought, because that's where people have been rewarded. Until that doesn't work, people are going to continue to do it.
I agree. And then there was some talk on CNBC about, you know, airline stimulus, and I mean, Are they going to like pay people to fly? I mean, you know, you could give all the stimulus you want, but if people are not going to hop on an airplane and go somewhere, you could throw all the money you want at them. And I don't think it's going to make a difference. Everyone is going to drive their electric cars somewhere on vacation. And, you know, until this is resolved, but the airlines will come back, but it's, just throwing more stimulus at them. I don't know if that's really
they're trying to survive. I mean, it's got to be the consumer habits, and what we've already said is there's some permanent changes here to consumer habits. Business travel is going to be less going forward, even when we beat the virus, because companies have realized that they can do a lot of efficiencies. They don't have all these huge travel bills, and they can do stuff better with a quick Zoom meeting. So stuff has changed, and the majority, a big chunk of airlines' profits are come from business travel. So tourism will probably come back. You're still going to see that travel. But if you've lost, 20 or 30% of your business travel, that means you're never going to see those profits that you saw before. And it's not even mean you can get back to profitable. It's going to be a long, long time, and they need money. And they need money to survive this tough time.
Consolidation.
But I don't even know if the good times are down the road. I cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel for the airlines. I wish I could, because a lot of these airlines are dirt cheap. I mean, where is American Airlines relative to, you're talking like decade lows. So, but there's a reason for that, that they may never make the kind of money that they did again.
And also something to think about is I wonder how many people that are flying, because, the numbers are going up, more people are flying. I wonder how many of those people are in my position where I was supposed to fly to Florida in March and didn't, and I have a voucher and I have one year to use it basically. And I wonder how many people
are you going to burn that 1 year voucher? You think, or you think you're going to go on and?
No, I mean I have until March to book a flight, but I wonder how many people that are flying had already paid for their ticket and are just using the voucher, right?
Some, yeah, there's some for sure.
Right. So it's not even like a new flight. But all right. Let's bring on Nate Tobik here. Nate runs the site CompleteBankData.com. He's also the author of the Bank Investors Handbook. And Nate, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Do you share our sentiment on the airlines?
Some, although I just I'm flying out next week. I booked a flight recently. And here was my thought on this. I started to look, and I was like, there's almost not a better time to fly. The planes are empty. The airports are empty. And so it's actually better to go now when everyone's scared to go versus when, the planes are packed with travelers going to, wherever. But
where are you going, Nate?
So I have a business meeting in Western Kansas, and it was driving 17 hours or flying 2.5 hours and driving 4. So it was kind of an easy decision on that one. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. The airports are empty.
Can't do Zoom?
No. It's a lot of in-person needed for this one. But okay. Yeah, no, it is an interesting thing. And we've been able to do a lot of stuff virtually. I do agree, though. It's a weird thing for travel, especially like you said, Dennis, if there's a 10 or 20% haircut to business travel volume, that's all of it. I mean, the deals right now on like rewards credit cards. I mean, so Southwest just sent out a deal yesterday. If you book one flight and fly it in the next, 2 months or something, you get a free companion pass for the winter. So that means any flight you take, someone else gets to fly for free. I mean, like right there, that tells you what they think their demand's going to be. They're able to give away free tickets for taking a, $49 flight once.
Yeah. Sure. So Nate, financials, that's your bag.
Yes.
Not really participating here at all. paint a picture for us here.
Yeah, that's kind of an understatement, right?
Yeah.
If you're
participating, they're just participating on the downside.
Yeah, it's we're looking at valuations just at the bank, the bank indexes. So like the KBW index or the you know, so KBW is the ticker, or KBWB, which is the regional bank ticker. I mean, these are like 80% of book value, 3-4% dividends, 10%, you know, price to earnings ratios. That's the sort of stuff we saw in like 2010, after the financial crisis. So, you know, which that was a totally different environment. We had growth coming out of that versus now, the Fed said rates are going to stay low to 2023. You know, banks are trying to figure out what they're going to do. And I think this is actually going to be just like we've seen the digital transformation, you know, with Zoom and working from home, that the exact same thing is going to happen with banks. And I use, for some of our business banking, I use a local bank, and their web interface is awful. Their credit card is awful. And so we've started to migrate accounts to a bank that, you know, we a credit card and banks that actually have like decent online banking, because that's the only way we interact with it now. And a lot of people are making that same decision. So having the tools for consumers is becoming important. If you're out, you know, and just 10 years behind on technology, that's just not going to cut it anymore.
I mean, this is environment for banks. It's so bad. Like, interest rates are so low. I mean, you can get a mortgage for under 2%. You just start thinking, like, how are they making money?
So mortgages are interesting. I mean, here's kind of the secret on a mortgage, right? So here's how the model breaks down. Let's just say we all wanted to create a non-bank lender mortgage company. If we were able to originate, say, $100,000 to $150,000 mortgages, we'd get like a $3,000 or $4,000 fee per mortgage originated, and then we could sell that off to the government to be securitized. So the game in mortgages is really you just need to find deal flow, and that's why you get all these letters from people, you know, now's the best time to refi, you're pre-qualified, because all they want is that origination fee up front. And they don't care about the rate behind the scene. And you know, the rate really just gets dumped onto the government. So if you're able to do, each person's able to do a couple dozen mortgages a month, and your funding cost is almost nothing on a warehouse line of credit, that's a really profitable business.
So are there specific areas of the sector that are appealing to you, be it geographically or by market cap or valuation, however you want to look at it? Are there areas that you do have your eye on?
Yeah, so I think there's two areas that are worth looking at. So I like some of the bigger banks. I don't like Wells Fargo. I've never been a Wells Fargo fan, but you know, Bank of America or JP Morgan, they have really mature products. They have great consumer product portfolios. And you could, for a consumer, you know, they have everything you would need. They also are able to do a lot of lending to businesses that aren't as impacted. So, you know, your mom and pop restaurant, they've been hit hard. You know, they can't, that's not where you want to be lending. A multinational or a larger company, a larger regional company, they're able to lend into that space. Likewise, larger regional banks, like PNC or, you know, like a Regions Financial, those, you know, US Bank, those sort of banks, I like those as well, because they're sitting right above the small banks, and they still have access to some of that larger, more profitable commercial loans to kind of the survivors and the companies that are going to thrive. They also are just more geographically diverse, and they're trading at the same valuation as a lot of these small banks that really have no future. And so I think those are interesting areas. You know, in terms of some of the really small stuff, I mean, if you could get it at a kind of a nosebleed valuation, I mean, there's banks out there at 40% of book value that are, they're going to do perfectly fine. So, you know, will they trade to 1x book, you know, 1.5x book like we saw prior to this? Probably not. But, you know, if you can go from 40 to 80, you doubled your money.
We're on the line with Nate Tolbeck. He's an investor, founder of CompleteBankData.com, also the author of the Bank Investor's Handbook. Nate, I want to ask you, Jamie Dimon made a statement back in April that, his bank is preparing for a severe recession, coming up. And markets pretty much ignored that call. When are we going to get the skinny on these loan losses? I mean, there's got to be some huge write-downs coming for these banks. I mean, if you're loaning money to oil companies, I mean, these oil companies, oil goes from 10 to 44, they don't rally. You got retailers, I'm sure they got huge lines of credit. You have REITs that are not getting their office, the rent. You're getting all these forbearances on mortgages. I mean, when is it going to come out in the dirty laundry? Is it going to be 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year? I mean, there has to be some kind of a day of reckoning here in the credit markets. When do you see that happening?
So I agree. It seems on kind of a common sense level, we should see that. I think the dynamic has changed in a way. And so the regulations changed and they forced banks to recognize potential losses up front starting Q1 this year. So banks had a lot of reserves, probably over-reserved, that impacted earnings coming into this year. And I think we will see some with huge write-downs, especially ones that are, really centralized to certain industries, oil and gas, et cetera. But for a lot of them, I think they reserved so much up front, and this is such a slow-moving train that they're going to be able to kind of just absorb those and trickle this out over time. What I think we haven't seen is a lot of bank earnings growth last year was from consumer lending, and we have not seen the day of reckoning on consumer lending yet. And, people still have the unemployment, there was the stimulus check, and a lot of people are still spending like everything's going to be perfectly normal. There's going to be a lot of hits to consumer credit, I think.
Nate, last one before I let you go here, but there was the headline from over the weekend and about just the 20 years of suspicious activity banking. Was any of that a surprise to you?
No. not really. Even criminals need a bank, right? Everyone needs to use it. I think, it's like some banks are, they're a little less willing to turn a blind eye to some of these things. And some banks, that's kind of their bread and butter and they just don't admit it. I think, ultimately the number, what was it? It was like $2 trillion or something. And, if you look at 20 years of transactions, though, $2 trillion really isn't all that much. If you think about the amount of money that's run through the system. It's not surprising. I think, if you remember a couple of years ago, there was the Panama Papers, when that came out, where it was all the names and all the details. I think that's, if something like that drops on this, that's going to be the really interesting aspect.
Before, Nate, one more, I'm going to sneak it in. The man who brought us, Bank of the Ozarks or Ozark Bank or something?
Oh, yeah.
You've been riding that thing down. Do you have any?
Great movie.
Yeah. Do you have any banks that you're picking on here that, you look at their loan portfolio and they're overextended? Ozark's here that's still near its low. Well, we got down to 15. Any other banks you're picking on or?
Bank of the Ozarks is a good one. I've also had my eye on, I've been picking through stuff in Oklahoma and Texas looking for energy exposure. And we're actually kind of doing a research project trying to dig out some of these companies that have operating loans. So I don't have any names at this point, but looking in those, hospitality is another big one. Some banks made so many loans to hotels. I saw an interesting article, I think it was yesterday, 2 days ago, they said low-end hotels seem to be doing fine. and high-end hotels are closing quickly. And I think this is all related back to that business travel, where business travelers, you know, they don't care about paying $370 a night to a Hyatt in, you know, Nowheresville, Indiana, because their company's footing the bill, but no one else actually would pay that, right? Whereas, you know, just a average chain is still getting consumer traffic. And a lot of banks really overextended themselves on hotels. I think this is actually a bigger problem with smaller banks right outside metro areas. So if you, you know, kind of the typical American city, it's like once you're 20 minutes outside town, there's, you know, the Walmart and some of the chain shopping and then a couple chain hotels. A lot of times that is not a Bank of America development. That's some regional or local bank that's made
doing it.
The majority.
All right,
of
I got an assignment for you, and I want a report back within a week. The banks with the biggest exposures to the restaurant industry.
Yeah, let me take a look and
okay.
See what we could find. That's a good. We'll let you know.
And if you want to, you know, get some more ideas from Nate, he's got a really good blog you can check out. He does some good, you know, balance sheet analysis there. It's oddballstocks.com. Covers the banks pretty thoroughly. It's not a ton of research on some of the stocks that he writes about there. So I would recommend that to our listeners. Again, that's oddballstocks.com. Nate Tobik is the founder of CompleteBankData.com. Nate, we thank you as always.
Thanks, Nate.
Stay safe. Yep, thank you.
Get a haircut before you go on that trip.
Thanks.
Oh, haircuts are overrated.
Haircuts are overrated. Come on. All right. 8:52. Let's go.
We did get Cintas, right?
Yeah. Yep. Can you talk about it yet,
Dennis? Yeah, I'm out of it. Yeah, I got out of it here. So, yeah, give us the numbers.
Well, they were good.
Yeah.
So I
guess they blew it away.
I can understand why the stock's up, but it was up before the report too. 278 was their EPS versus a $2.13 estimate. Sales of 1.75 versus $1.7 billion. So a beat on the sales and a beat on the earnings. Good quarter. Good morning. Although, actually, never mind.
Everybody apparently knew it was going to be good. They were bidding this up so much last night that I was like, I got to short it. I'm like, so anyway, somebody bid 347 last night. And I was like, if they want to give me a 23-point lead in the report, I actually thought Cintas was going to beat. So I'm like, I'm kind of going against my thought, but I was like, I don't think it's, even if it beats, I looked at the straddle and the straddle was 23 points. I was like, even if it beats, I don't think it's getting through 350. So I'll short 347 to have the wild card that, hey, maybe they don't beat by much, or maybe they, you know, or it doesn't go up 23 points. So I just covered it. I covered it right here in the mid 338s, just wiggling out. I've been wiggling out entire Nate Tobik interview there. So I'm covered now, but I still made 8 points. And
can I guess on how many shares?
No, you can't. I don't ever talk how many shares, but there wasn't very many bids. You
sold the high of the day.
I sold the high of the day. Yeah. So you can see my shares. There wasn't very many. It was a couple hundred shares there. And I was like, okay, we'll take a shot. But anyways, you know, it's always scary going short in the report, but when they want to give me a 23-point lead and we don't even know the report, like somebody wants to bid up a stock 23 points, literally like 8% ahead of the numbers, I'll take the shot.
So you and had time just shows you how to look crazy at that bid are. And then go look at the straddle price?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no. Sometimes I look at the – sometimes I just quickly hit the bid. That's too much. And then I was like, I'm trying to analyze it after the fact. After the fact, Jack here. But, you know, you see, like, I saw even some big open interest at the 350. I was like, I don't think it's getting through 350. Even if they kill it, I don't think it's going through 350. So, you know, here they kill it. And that person who's buying at 347 last night still loses 8 points. So moral of the story is don't pay up the straddle ahead of the report. You're paying up as much as the straddle ahead of the report. You're probably losing money most of the time. So anyway.
So you looked at the straddle
I took 8
afterwards.
Points off it, and they still killed, and I still made 8 points. So
congratulations. That's a good, no, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Well, you just have to, yeah. You know what? You got to look at those straddles. I mean, I'm not even an options trader, but you got to look and you got to analyze where's the potential move. And so when you go in and you look at, you know, go into the straddle and or even just go into the individual option chain on CTAS. And this isn't just a good education. When we're talking straddle for the newer traders out there, what we're talking about is the calls and the puts at the same strike. So you add them up and that's the expected move of the stock. So I'll just do a quick example for you. Yeah, because options aren't open, so you don't have them trading right now. So you could just go grab the 330, for instance. So the 330 on October, wow. And actually, this is they don't have weeklies. They don't even have weeklies. Wow. So you had to go out to the – you had a full month with this on the straddle. And so they were giving you the full month, not even on the weeklies, for $23. So $25 if you go to the closing prices. The spread's wide, so you got to say it's $23 to $25. But even if you look, you got the 350s, 707 open interest. That's pretty big. So it's always like you go through here and you kind of ballpark, like, you know, we've had some people on the show doing the same thing. Where's the big numbers, you know, when you're looking at the open interest? And you can see, okay, 320 on the call side is fairly significant, and then 350 jumps out at you. So you right away, you think range probably 320 to 350 on this puppy. And when it reports, they want to sell, buy it up at 347 last night, the top of the range, I'll sell it to them.
All right, let's go to the chat. Do some take your time for the past few minutes, last few minutes here. First one I'll go to just from the bottom up here. We'll just do Shopify from Easy Mike there.
Data breach.
There was a
matter.
Involving less than 200 merchants. Looks like smaller scale breach, whatever that's worth.
They're hitting it. They're also hitting, you know, a lot of tech stocks here. They're hitting tech to a certain extent this morning, probably because of Tesla. So it's down a bit. It had a nice run yesterday. I think you buy it on the pullback if you're interested. If you want to be in Shopify, this is the kind of stock that will eventually probably get some love again. Valuation's crazy, so you can't look at it as a long-term investment. But if you're looking at a trade, I think in the lower 900s, it's a buy. And every time we see these data breaches, I feel like these are usually buying opportunities. Are they not, Joel? Am I just selective perception of my
part? I mean, it depends. What was that one that had like the colossal data breach?
Then eventually came back too.
Yeah, what stock was that, Spencer? Well,
Sony had a big one.
No, but Joel knows. Capital like One had a big 4 years one. Ago.
I'm naming them. Capital One had a big one.
No, the one that fell like 30% on it. You know, I know what you're talking
about. Did it have a V in it or something?
Oh, man. Goldfish Equifax. Coming into play here. Oh, there you go. Joel, look at this. He's so smart.
Easy Mike.
Easy Mike got it. Yeah, look at the EFX. This was back. Was it this year or was it? It was longer than that.
It was back here.
Like, yeah, 2017.
Yep.
And stock went from like $146 down to like $89. It eventually came back. So moral of the story is you buy these data breaches. You buy them, eventually they come back.
The bigger the data breach, the bigger you buy.
Yeah. If it goes down more, it comes, they come back eventually. I mean, Facebook's had data breaches, haven't they?
Maybe they should breach the data here at the pre-market prep show.
if this sort of trade is your bag, I mentioned that I've been long the CIBR, the NASDAQ cybersecurity ETF there for a minute. So
a lot of those cybersecurity stocks have come down a lot. Yeah. You know, that's not a bad trade right now. You know, even FireEye. Look at FireEye showed life yesterday coming out of the gutter. That's been the dog of the group.
That stock.
I'm still at CyberArk. This is like my new FedEx. Like I get up like 15 points and it comes back to scratch. I get up like 20 points and it comes back to scratch. Now I'm trying to get up and again. I'm in from like $96. I've been up a couple of times. I should be trading this thing and obviously not just holding on to it, but FedEx worked out longer term, so maybe I'll try not to look at CyberArk.
Oh, I didn't realize you have such anger for FireEye. Holy cow, that came out of nowhere.
Oh, no, I mean, it's
I don't
just
like FireEye either.
13, 14.
You think about what the other ones have done. This has been such a dog.
Man.
But I liked the candle yesterday, so on a pullback here, maybe FireEye is interesting for a trade.
Holy cow.
And Guy Adami pumps it like every show, so you know, there's a lot of Guy Adami fluff.
Well, let it go to 16, then it goes back down to 12.50.
Trade the range.
All right. What else do we have?
Let's see. Just keeping an eye on the earnings calendar. Nothing really today.
Can we get some tickers?
I just someone mentioned Costco.
We have like 30 seconds.
This is why I brought that up. Someone mentioned Costco, so they'll report tomorrow. What else do I see here? CrowdStrike, Zoom getting a mention. We can look at those. We've looked at them recently.
Why is Costco up $4?
Because they have earnings tomorrow.
It just works. You just buy them ahead of the earnings and they just go up.
That's, I mean, isn't it? I thought it was that simple. No?
I tell you, it is. I do that trade all the time. I buy them ahead of the earnings. It does work. That's the dumbest trade, but it actually works.
Tough chart here. I don't know. I think people want to see this high that you had. It 350, I still call that resistance. Hard, tough call ahead of earnings. You did sneak over that in the pre-market. You got to 350, 50. I see a high just under 350, so pretty good resistance there. Don't have a good feel where to buy this one. Maybe unchanged, but I don't know. Probably just chop around today.
All right, we will cover more tickers at our 3:40 show. That's also on our YouTube channel. So check that out. If you haven't, you can catch all the replays of our show on YouTube, or if you listen on the go, you'd rather listen to podcasts, we're on every major podcast platform, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks to our guest, Nate Tobik. Thanks to all of you in our chats. I want to see some more likes. We appreciate all the likes. Thank you. We appreciate all the subscribes. We keep track of that stuff. So thank you very much for that.
What a ratio. We got 1,300 watching now, 261 likes. Is there any show that has that high of a like?
Don't talk about the likes. Remember last time you started talking about the likes?
There we go. We just got dislikes. Us.
There we go.
I don't care if you like me or not, really.
You care. Everybody wants to be liked. I like to be liked.
We got rid of some of the mean guys in the chat. I don't know where they've been. Maybe they'll come back.
There's always a mean guy. We like the mean guys. We like the hate.
Or mean gal.
Mean girls, too. We like.
No, we don't have any mean girls.
No, the girls are all nice. It's the mean guys. You're right.
Okay. Thanks to those chatters on YouTube, all of you chatting on Benzinga.com/market-prep and on Benzinga Pro. Please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. That is a wrap. We'll be back in the afternoon. Everyone have a great rest of your day.